Well, thank you so much for coming out tonight. It's a cold night, but what a special night also. William Gaddis was, among many countless other things, an exceedingly private writer. He was not alone in this penchant for staying out of the public eye. Salinger, Pynchon, and Cormac McCarthy come to mind. But while he avoided stages and book touring and interviews and all the trappings associated with book promotion, he was, to those who knew him well, and even those such as myself who had the good fortune of hanging out with him a dozen or so times over the years, a warm, incisive, amazing, gentlemanly, quick-witted, deeply intelligent man who left an indelible impression on those around him. The publication of some 50 pages of selected Gaddis letters in the new issue of Conjunctions and Dalkey Archives' collection of his letters, edited by Stephen Moore and with an afterword by the author's daughter, Sarah Gaddis, are cause for celebration. These letters offer an unfiltered glimpse into the life, its hopes, struggles, and opinions of one of the greatest novelists of the 20th, or for that matter, in my opinion, any century. Gaddis famously said in his 1976 acceptance speech for the National Book Award in Fiction for J.R., quote, "I feel like part of the vanishing breed that thinks a writer should be read and not heard, let alone seen. I think this is because there seems so often today to be a tendency to put the person in the place of his or her work, to turn the creative artist into a performing one, to find what a writer says about writing somehow more valid or more real than the writing itself." When I was reading through the manuscript of Gaddis's letters, this statement came to mind, and I found myself wondering what his thoughts would have been about his private words faring forth into the larger world of his readers and scholars. Most writers of Gaddis's stature face this prospect. Indeed, when W.B. Yeats was collecting his own letters for publication, the anecdote has it he asked recipients of his correspondence to return the letters so that he could revise and improve them. That's great. Whether or not it's a true story, it does sound like something Yeats might do. Gaddis's letters, however, even the earliest ones, when he was working as a crane operator at the Panama Canal in Pedro Miguel and just beginning to write the Recognitions, would neither require nor submit to revision. Self-deprecating, rigorously erudite, slyly nuanced, idiosyncratic, humble yet ambitious, and very, very focused, these letters shine with a masterful wisdom, as you'll hear tonight, in every sentence. Writing to his mother from the Canal Zone in January 1948, for instance, he betrays a kind of gossamer assuredness behind the young man's dream of becoming a writer. "Dear mother, wouldn't it be nice if I could write a good novel? Well, that is what I've been trying to do all morning. Now it is near time for lunch, and then my presence and talents are required at the Miraflores lock until 11 p.m. to take up with my crane. And coming in near midnight after that leaves me not wanting very much to jump out of bed in the morning for the great prose epic that is daily escaping from under my hand." The 26-year-old Gaddis goes on to thank his mother, Edith, for her attempt to acquire for her fledgling writer son an attaché case in which to carry his manuscript around. Gaddis's self-knowledge and humility, as well as a strong belief in himself, is evident in the sentence that follows. "Because for the writing, I don't think I have anything really worthwhile carrying in one yet." That's my emphasis, by the way, on the word yet. I do so because inherent in the judgment of this Harvard grad turned crane operator, who at the same time was working on what would prove to be one of the greatest, most ambitious of American novels, was the fact he didn't consider himself attaché case worthy yet, but that one day he would. Moments of such self-awareness abound in these letters, as they do in his books. It's a razor-sharp perspicacity that so many of Gaddis's most memorable characters, from Rectal Brown to Paul Booth, the Paul Booths of the world, lack. The kind of perspicacity that's invaluable to a novelist of Gaddis's enormous vision and uncompromising artistic wisdom. To me, it's akin to moral goodness. And it comes as no surprise that in the very first letter in the Conjunctions selection, written to his college friend Barney Emmert. Gaddis describes the recognitions as, quote, a rather moral book, and it concerns itself with good and evil, close quote. But neither was Gaddis a black and white dichotomist. To this day, I find it impressive and even endearing that when I first met him at a reception at the American Academy of Arts and Letters and congratulated him on the forthcoming publication of Carpenter's Gothic, he expressed concern that Vietnam vets were going to hate him for his depiction of one of their own who returned from the war to become an abusive, alcoholic, lying, conniving spin doctor. I'd read the book in proofs and told him I didn't think he had anything to worry about, and besides, a lot of vets came home messed up and with no adequate support from the government that sent them to war in the first place. What was impressive and endearing was that Gaddis managed both to indict this fictional vet's unethical, crazy behavior, while at the same time compass the complexities of how he got that way. He even references this in a letter to his ex-wife Judith in January 1987, when he writes, quote, poor fellow, reviewers find him mean, bad, brutal, etc., where I found him desperate, confused, desolated, as much or more a victim as anyone. This is a novelist capable of profound empathy, in other words, one who thinks of his characters as less as characters and more as people, richly brocaded with flaws deserving of excoriation, but also worthy of contemplation and understanding of how they became who they are.